the phone rings and it's my mom. And she goes, "I can't believe you would be so manipulative." And I, like, this is a pretty common greeting. So I was like, what did I do now? You know? So she said, "I can't believe that you would make your partner pretend to ask to marry you just so we would co-sign that loan."
That was Rachel Allen, and you're listening to Going There, episode 50. Oh my God. Episode 50, you guys. Enjoy the show. Going There is a podcast for humans by humans, where we talk with people who've had the absolute emotional shit kicked out of them and come back swinging each and every time. Together, we dive deep into how we navigate the fears, loneliness, challenges, triumphs, oh fucks, and most importantly, find the silver linings. Because when we're able to tell our story about the places that hurt, we remove the power over us. Going There is the place to come for real stories and powerful advice for your own healing journey. I'm your host, Jen Burtman. Welcome back, everyone. I am thrilled to have my guest today. Her name is Rachel Allen, and Rachel has actually been doing some wizardry copywriting work on my website to take my thoughts and intentions and all the swirly words in my head and actually put them into something that makes sense so that the readers of Going There know what it is that I actually do and what I'm all about. So welcome, Rachel.
Thank you, Jen. I'm so excited to be talking with you.
Yeah. So we weren't sure where we were going to start. And I was like, well, maybe we start with 4-year-old Rachel that got into the dark arts.
Obviously.
That's not really the story, is it?
Well, not the story for public consumption.
Oh, no, okay.
It's really not the story.
So I would love to. You had reached out, you know, after working together and just we had this great chemistry and you were like, I want to be on Going There, right? Yeah. Like you have stories to share. And I think you're ready to share them in the spirit of helping others feel less alone, you know, including yourself. I mean, we've talked about that, right? Of kind of some of that loneliness that I think everyone experiences and we just happen to be okay talking about it sometimes. But yeah, I'd love to hear what made you say, I want to be on the show. I want my stories out there for people to hear and relate to and all that stuff.
Okay, cool. Honestly, the first answer was I would like to spend more time talking with Jen because I love having conversations awesome. With you.
And this one I don't have to pay you for. Like, this is totally free.
Know, right?
This is awesome. We should do this more. No, I'm kidding.
Exactly. But your awesomeness aside, I really love the premise of the show in that when we share our stories and when we are true with each other and genuine with each other, everybody gets to kind of have a moment of like, okay, it's not just me.
Yeah.
And I love that. And while a lot of my work is about finding those sort of underlying, it's not just me moments and translating them into business copy, for me, the coolest part is the moment where you can take that idea and get it out of somebody's head and be like, oh, this is a universal, this is an everybody thing. That's why I wanted to come on the show.
To the listeners, like there's only a few people that I've met in life that are able to see through my bullshit. And I'm pretty honest. Like I can present a pretty good front, as I'm sure most people can. But, you know, I'm really good at even bullshitting myself. And so when I come across people that are able to call me on that, I'm like, oh, it's so refreshing. Thank you.
Honestly, it takes one to know one. I was right? Like, oh, that is my tap dance of choice. I recognize that.
Yeah. But when you put together, again, my jumbled thoughts and all the things and you put it into words that actually made sense, it just, what I felt was just the tingles and chills and almost the nausea, but like in a really good way of like, oh my God, yes, that's it. So you are an absolute word wizard.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. Anyway, what stories, you know, do you want to share? Where do you want to start?
So this is the part where I always find myself a little bit spoiled for choice because I have a lot of things that I like to talk about.
We want to go there though.
Let's go there. Okay. I'm going to let you guide me a little bit, but
yeah.
We can do a choose your own adventure style thing.
Oh, I love adventure.
All right. So choose your own adventure. Story of how when I graduated and thought I had my life all set out for me and it totally didn't happen that way at all. And I ended up falling backwards into the career that I have now. And I love it with some massive bumps along the way. I also have the story of I grew up in a culture that's really, really different than what I espouse now. And although most people wouldn't know it, given the way I talk now, I actually grew up in Appalachia in like the real hillbilly part. And it wasn't a fit for me to live in, you know, long term. But that was an interesting transition of going from Appalachia to Hong Kong and being like, holy shit, there's a whole world out there.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the story that I think that everybody has of kind of figuring out like, okay, who do I want to be as an adult? You know, because I feel like we live so reactively for so long. And then I think if we're lucky, we come to a moment where everything kind of goes to shit and you have to decide like, okay, who do I want to be going forwards? And that's really been the past probably 2 years for me.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. Like literally every single thing in my life turned totally upside down. I didn't know which way was up, and I've kind of been figuring out where I want to go next.
Yeah. Which one hurts a little bit to share? Which one feels more vulnerable?
Okay. Definitely the most recent one.
Okay. Yeah. That's kind of what I was getting or sensing.
Well, it works out because, I mean, as you know, stories are continuous. So it's all the same story. Just where are we diving in?
Yeah. So let's dive in there.
Okay, cool. So at the end of 2016, so almost a year and a half ago now, I was on the tail end of a 9-year relationship that was probably lasted like 4 to 5 years too long.
Those are the best.
I know. And it had been awesome. Like we met when I was 20 and had this like wonderful, passionate, you know, loving relationship where we traveled around the world together and we were everything for each other because we both come from families that were estranged from. And so we both walked away from our families and we're like, okay, you're my deal now. Like we're in this together.
Mm-hmm.
We weren't technically married, but this was a lifetime type thing. And we started out by bringing out the best in each other. And then gradually we kind of started bringing out the worst in each other.
Mm-hmm.
And as much as we tried to kind of turn that ship around, it wasn't happening. He wanted to keep trying. And I was about a month away from our 9-year anniversary and said, I don't want to do another year like this. It's time to call it. And so 3 days before our 9-year anniversary, I left. And since we were living in the UK at the time, I'm American, he was Chinese, we were living in the UK. That meant that in leaving him, it wasn't just leaving a relationship, which in and of itself is like, you know, gut-wrenching.
Mm-hmm.
But it meant losing my visa. So I left the relationship, had to move internationally. At the time, my business was going through this really weird slump, which it had never happened before, but I had nothing. Like I was kind of at the point of, I don't know if I'm going to be able to do this anymore. And I had been doing this for 8 years and things have been great. And then suddenly it was like, no clients. I was close to broke, moving internationally, leaving a relationship, not even sure what I was going to do with anything. I called one of my best friends, lives in Switzerland, and I said, look, can I come and crash your Christmas? Because it was right at the end of the year. And she said, of course, just come and stay. You'll figure it out. So I was so lucky to land there.
Yeah.
And I remember sitting on her futon, you know, just right before I turned 30, sitting on her futon in a house that wasn't mine, in a life that I didn't know what was up and what was down and what was going to happen. Just like aching by physically not being next to this person that I had been next to for nearly a decade.
Yeah.
And thinking, I don't know what's going to happen at all.
And that was just a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And around Christmas time.
Like that's, I know, right around the holiday.
Her in there.
I know, right around the holiday.
So what happened next? So you were on this futon in Switzerland around Christmas, which, hello, that sounds phenomenal, but you weren't feeling so phenomenal, right?
I know. I'm in this village. It's like a fairy tale of a village. Yeah. It looks like a Disney movie. It's gorgeous. Like everything's wonderful. It's a beautiful Christmas. And I'm like sneaking off in between meals to like cry in my room and just be like, it's okay. Yeah, great. Okay. Merry Christmas, everyone. Joyeux Noël.
But seriously, I mean, what happened next?
Well, as I was sitting there, I kind of had this moment of, I don't know if you know the quote about Haruki Murakami and the storm.
Yeah, you shared that with me, but yeah, please share it with the listeners.
I'm actually going to look it up really quick.
Okay,
it's
yeah.
Beautiful, and I don't want to butcher it, and I'm a word person, and that's my deal. So
it is beautiful.
You can just do your hold music for a minute.
How's your Saturday going?
really good, except I should have prepared.
That's okay. Just do your thing. I don't think I've ever sent you Justin before. Justin's the best. Justin, you're awesome.
Hi, Justin. Thank you for fixing this for me. All right. So I won't read the whole quote because it's incredibly long, but basically it starts out and it says, sometimes fate is like a small sandstorm that keeps changing directions. You change direction, but the sandstorm chases you. You turn again, but the storm adjusts. Over and over, you play this out like some ominous dance with death before dawn. Why? Because this storm isn't something that blew in from far away, something that has nothing to do with you. This storm is you, something inside you.
That's just like kicking the gut, isn't it?
And it goes on and it's beautiful and it's, you know, wonderful, Murakami. And at the end, the idea is once you come out the other side, you're not even going to recognize yourself and you won't remember what it was like, but you will have been changed.
Yeah.
And so I was kind of sitting in that moment and thinking like, what the fuck is happening to me? Yeah. And I kind of felt like I couldn't trust anything.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't trust my relationships because, you know, that exploded.
You couldn't trust your business.
Couldn't trust my business because I wasn't making any money. Couldn't trust myself because I was the person who had gotten myself into a relationship and stayed too long and then had to move internationally and was, you know, technically couch surfing in my 30s, which is not really what I pictured.
You had just turned 30.
I know. But, you know, being the perfectionist-y person I am, I'm like, well, you know, by 22, I'm going to have my retirement fund set up and da-da-da, which of course, like, totally didn't happen.
Yeah.
Which is cool. But at the moment, I was like, there is nothing in my life that is sure right now. And I was furiously journaling, like, throughout this entire thing. I think I went through 3 journals in that month I was there in Switzerland. And it came to me when I was writing, and I said, if there's nothing else in this entire world that I can trust, I can trust my words. Because that's what they, you know, ever since I was a kid and I was reading books, words took me out of where I was and allowed me to get to where I wanted to be.
Mm-hmm.
They have been literally my bread and butter forever. It's how I make my living. And one really, I think, important step in my life was learning to claim my own words and say, like, I know when something hurts me. I know how I feel about this. And being able to articulate that and say, oh no, this did really happen, or that did really happen, when that wasn't always an option on the table for me. That was what happened next. I realized that even though I can't trust literally anything else in my life right now, for whatever reason, I'm still going to trust that my words are going to see me through somehow.
Wow. When you read the journals, read back on them, what were your words saying?
It was just a peon of heartbreak and like pure emotion. It was a lot of like, I don't know. I don't know. I just don't know. And that's really hard for me because I really, really like to know.
Right. Yeah. That was one of the things I went through. Mine was like 3 years ago. It was like, I was so sure of everything. And then I was sure of nothing.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard.
Yeah. Because it's like your own mind is kind of, you know, up for grabs. It's, I don't know what I think. I don't know.
Yeah. What do you think the heartbreak, I mean, there's the surface level heartbreak, right? And then there's the really deep down heartbreak.
Yeah.
What was that deep down?
This is going to sound like a little bit of a tangent, but it's not. I feel like I know. And it's like, it's going to sound like I'm ignoring your question.
Well, then there was this robot in my dream.
Exactly. Right. So I feel the way I see life is that things exist primarily in scales and fractals. And so everything that is small is also everything that is large. And, you know, this is true whether you're writing or whether you're in a relationship or whatever. And so, like you said, there was this surface level heartbreak of like, I've left this person that I thought was going to be my partner forever, which is in itself hideous. And then I think there was the deeper level heartbreak of when I got into the relationship with that person, I totally didn't have my shit together when it came to like adulting. And
You were like 20.
I know.
Okay. But okay. You know that now. Okay.
Yeah. But at the time it was kind of like looking back, I can see that one of the reasons that relationship was so intense was because about the time I got together with him, I also went no contact with my family.
Oh shit.
Yeah. So I traded one very dysfunctional relationship for another intense relationship that eventually became dysfunctional.
Yeah.
And then I think, I suppose going back even further, if we're like fractaling back even further on the scale, I think it was the heartbreak of like, I kind of thought that I knew who I was and how I wanted to be. And I didn't anymore. Mm-hmm. And so it was like a series of breaks with him, with my family, and with myself.
That's enough.
Yeah. I don't know what else could have really broken.
What has the last year and a half of taking that information and doing something with it, like, what does that look like for you? Like, where are you at now? Are you through the sandstorm? Are you still in the throes of the sandstorm? Is that like sand whipping you in the eye and being like, oh, I can't see.
I'm blind. No.
I'm blind.
I'm at the point where now things have changed so dramatically for the better. And I'm so much happier. And I'm so grateful that I went through that and kind mm-hmm. of refound my grounding, because the tail end of that was, okay, well, who do I want to be? If everything is off the table, you know, if the mm-hmm. entire chessboard is flipped and it's all, I don't even know what game we're playing anymore. It's kind of been like, okay, well, I don't know. What do I want? And figuring that out and kind of exploring, like asking new questions, I suppose mm-hmm. could be the best mm-hmm. way to describe it. And that's been awesome. I loved it. It's been exhausting and kind of terrifying.
Yeah. You know, I love hard questions.
Oh, totally.
What is your favorite question to ask yourself? Like in those moments.
My favorite question.
And it could be a couple.
Yeah, I know. Now I'm like, I'm trying in my brain, they're all in a little list and I'm like collating them according to importance. Yeah. So the first question that I like to ask myself is probably why.
Mm.
Like if I have this feeling or I have this story or something's happening, it's kind of like, what's going on here in the, both in the like, now and in a theoretical sense of the word. So like if I am feeling worried about something, it could be I'm just feeling worried about it, or it could be that like, oh, actually I'm feeling worried about it because that's a really old story I have that I kind of thought I had dealt with and it's coming back up again.
Yeah we've talked about this, like it's easy to stay at the surface level. Well, why am I feeling this way? And it's easy to find evidence and stories to support that, right?
Yeah.
And that's what we're trying to get people to do, is dive under that a little bit and get to more the heart of it. Like, you know, well, what's actually going on? What's in my control? All of that. If you were to ask yourself that question now, and maybe now's not a good time, but.
I know, now I'm like super jazzed to be talking to you. So I'm like,
I know.
Why? Because I'm happy.
Why? Yeah, why? Why? If you were just to ask that, well, like, why? What's going on in Rachel's world right now? Why?
So the first thing that comes to my mind is creative destruction.
Ooh,
like, that's been
the story. I love that.
I know.
Do you love it? Like, is that a good thing for you?
I will love being done with it.
Yeah.
You know, there's that old saying of like, I don't want to write, I want to have written.
Yes.
Like, I want to have creatively destroyed, which I'm pretty much on the flip side of it now.
Okay.
One thing that's been really cool in the past year is I think I figured out the latest iteration of life's work is all about.
What is that?
So...
She gets a little shy and blushing.
I know, like little like 8-year-old Rachel's like, I don't know. Nice work. What it is though.
Let's have it be as messy as it needs to be. Let's just say it.
Here are all the things. I've developed a theory about what makes all great writing and communication great. And because this bugged me forever, because I could mm-hmm. do it and I could recognize it, but I couldn't like understand it.
Yeah, you couldn't name it.
Yeah. And so I finally figured out, I think, that the difference between like technically accomplished communication and the really great, like heart melting, like, holy shit, that's amazing stuff.
Yeah. What you give me.
Yeah.
You give me the holy shits, Rachel.
Thank you so much. That's what I actually put on my business card.
Anyway, back to your more serious story.
Well, for me, the whole deal is, I believe that truly great communication is both true and gracious.
Mm.
So what I mean by that is the way I see the world is we all walk around with like pure potential, like mind meltingly creative amazingness in our heads. And we all have something that's our thing to share and to do. But unless you can figure out how to translate that into the real world through your words, it's just going to hang out in your head. It never gets to be real.
Yeah.
And so the thing that I do and my life's purpose is helping people translate that amazing you know, whatever their thing is, out of their head and out of their heart and making it real through words.
Yeah, I can 100% attest to that.
Thank you. That's my thing so much. I actually have a tattoo on my back of a Metatron's cube.
I don't know what that is.
Now I'm like, shall I just take my shirt off? Is this how we go? And is this...
Yeah, let's do it.
I think I can show you without losing the whole thing, but I'll send you a picture anyway.
Okay.
But you can see the top of it here.
Oh yeah, I love it. What's the meaning?
It's a type of sacred geometry. And, you know, in Judeo-Christian religions, Metatron was the scribe of God. And so this is his symbol, and it stands for taking ideas and turning them into reality through words.
Oh my God, Rachel. Oh my God. So I don't know if I was telling you this or not, but a friend of mine posted on Facebook recently, like, do you ever question your life's purpose? And she's not in our online business entrepreneurial circles whatsoever, but it, for the first time in my life, I was able to say, like, with 100% conviction, yeah, like, I know my life's purpose, right? But it took 48-ish years to get there. And so hearing another say, this is my life purpose, like, with the conviction that I know you have, is just, like, I'm in awe, right, of people that can find that, because we're searchers, we're seekers, we're always finding what is that purpose and meaning, right? And then to actually find it is such, I wish everyone could find that for themselves, because it, like, takes this huge question that we've had our whole entire lives. And it's like, now it's answered. And now you can go on to the next really huge question, right? I don't know. That's kind of how I think of it. And I just, that's my wish for everyone. And like, you're actually doing the work to help others get it out of their head and hearts and in real, like, into the world so that other people can see it and what have you. You're phenomenal. And you are so good at it. So I want to go to your estrangement from your family.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Are you still estranged?
I am, from just about everyone, with the exception of my mom's parents and sort of a couple of tangential relationships there. But I'm totally estranged from my nuclear family of origin, whatever. Mm-hmm. And from my dad's side of the family.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And that's been since you were 20.
Yeah, it was kind of like in the death knells in my early 20s, and then full on, like, I'm out at 24. Yeah,
happen out.
Like, there is no saving this.
What are you comfortable sharing around that? Because I'm always, you know, being estranged from my dad and the feelings that come with that. Like, it's not easy, right?
Yeah.
For me, I definitely feel guilt while still knowing it's the right thing for myself and my family. Mm-hmm. But yeah, what are you comfortable sharing around that? Because I think there's more of us that are wanting to have that strong boundary, but aren't able to overcome the guilt enough to, whether, you know, set a strong boundary, whether that means estrangement or not. And so I think that sharing those stories around that helps others, if you're comfortable talking about it.
Oh yeah, I'm totally comfortable talking about it.
Yeah.
So I actually have three things. The first thing that I thought of when you were saying that is, oh my God, the guilt is a mind fuck.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I spent the entire year after I, like, fully went no contact, I felt like I had a courtroom in my head all the time. And there was a judge weighing evidence. Like, are you sure? Was there anything else you could have done? Like, all that stuff. So I found that to be incredibly difficult. Mm-hmm. And I think that other people probably would too. So just sharing that of, like, this is the guilt will always get you, and it will never be fun. And that's not always an indicator that it's the wrong thing.
Right. Unfortunately.
I know. It's just like part of the shitty sandwich you get with this.
The shit sandwich. There you go.
The second thing is, I was shocked at how much more common this is than I thought it was.
Yeah.
Because when I was going through it, I thought I was probably like one of, I don't know, seven people in the entire world who have cut their parents off. And I've met like dozens. As soon as you say it, people are like,
I do that too. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that would be the second thing. I would be like, you're not alone. I promise. There is at least me.
And me.
Yeah. And Jen. So join the club.
Yeah. We're cool.
Yeah. Oh, it's super cool.
Yeah.
So I think what the actual question you were asking me was, like, what was that story? How did that come about? So now that I've got my public service announcements out of the way, you are not alone. And no, it's not fun ever.
Yeah. Don't think it will be. You will always feel guilt.
Ever. Yeah. So the story with me was I grew up in a home where there was a lot of physical and psychological and emotional abuse. All of that had the flavor. It was very heavily like fundamentalist Presbyterian religion flavored.
I was Presbyterian too, but not fundamentalist.
Mm-hmm. Presbyterians, it's a weird flavor of Christianity in general.
Mm-hmm.
I'm happy to talk about that. Do you have questions or?
No. I just love the silent pause when we're like, yeah.
That happened.
Well, now I'm wondering what led to why the estrangement? And again, with whatever you're comfortable sharing, was it just like, these are not my people. I'm not going to invest the emotional labor into them.
Okay. So there was a couple of things that kind of led up to it. For years and years, I had kind of done that thing that you do when you're in the middle of an abusive situation and you're like, well, they're family.
Yeah.
Or you don't realize that some things are weird until somebody, like you accidentally say something out loud that you think is normal. And then they're like, holy shit, dude, like that's probably abuse.
Right. Yeah.
And so I kind of like been gradually poking around the edges of like, wait a minute, like that's not right. Normal. Like, I don't think that's how most people react, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then kind of untangling the process of like, is this family weirdness, Southern weirdness, or just plain old weird?
Fundamental Christian weirdness.
Yeah, like yeah, there's a lot of flavors in there that I was kind
you
of like.
A lot of tendrils that you could go down.
Exactly. And then kind of deciding as like, I'm kind of becoming a little baby adult in my 20s, you know, like, I actually don't think I agree with this. Like, that's wrong. You know, kind of deciding your own beliefs. And so the thing that led most directly to the estrangement was, it's a little bit of a complex story, but two main threads that you need to know are, at the time, I was back in North Carolina living with my partner of the time, and we were both going to go to school in England. I was going to go back and get my master's in England. And so the one track of this story is I was applying for a student loan and was going to need a co-signer to get it. But we actually, like, it wasn't like a make or break thing. It was just like, oh, if we had the co-signer, that would make things easier. You know, so that's the one track of the story. The other track of the story is that unbeknownst to me at the time, my partner was going to propose to me.
Oh.
And I didn't know, but he asked my parents because he was polite and did that, even though he knew they were, you know, it was going to be a clusterfuck.
Mm-hmm.
So he asked them, didn't tell me, nobody, you know, I was in the dark. So I remember I was just about to go out for groceries one day. He was, I don't know where he was, but I was getting in the car and the phone rings and it's my mom. And she goes, I can't believe you would be so manipulative. And I like, this is a pretty common greeting. So I was like,
yeah,
like, what did I do now? You know,
good morning. How are you today?
Yeah, exactly. And so she said, I can't believe that you would make your partner pretend to ask to marry you just so we would co-sign that loan. You know that he's not going to, like, we both know no one's ever going to want to marry you. So I know it can't be real. So I can't believe you would try to cheat us out of money in this way.
Oh, yeah. My God.
And I, like, distinctly remember.
Jaw-dropping.
Like, I pulled the phone away from my ear. I shut it because it was a flip phone because that's how old this was. I, like, dropped it in the footwell of the seat next to me in the passenger seat. And I was just like, no.
This is not the way it goes.
Yeah. Like if your reaction, you don't have to be happy for me, like to first of all, spoil an engagement. And then like, who does that? And you don't have to be happy for me, but a stranger in the grocery store would have been like, oh my God, that's so exciting. I'm happy for you. Not, we both know no one's ever going to marry you. So you're just trying to cheat us out of money.
My God, Rachel. I can only imagine the many, many stories you've built up over the years from hearing that all through childhood.
Oh my God.
You know, I know.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I am so sorry.
I appreciate that. I don't get a charge off it, you know, the way that I used to because I've done a lot of work around it.
But jeez.
And that was kind of the culminating point after years of stuff in that vein of crazy. Yeah. There was like a lot of gaslighting of like, no, you don't know that didn't happen over really stupid shit. Like I would say something like, I enjoyed the chicken we had for dinner last night. And they would say, we didn't have chicken. We had shrimp. And I was like, but I was there. Like, I know.
Oh my God.
And so I had gotten so turned around though, like after years and years of that. And so that's a relatively innocuous thing.
But still.
But it gets uglier too when it's like, well, no, we didn't beat you with a belt. That didn't happen.
Oh, and I'm like, God.
But I was there. I think it did. Didn't it?
Yeah.
And after years, it's so messed up in your mind where it's kind of like you can't trust your own reality.
Yeah. I know. And I've talked about this before and it does shockingly just roll off my tongue. But, you know, anytime I start questioning, you know, well, am I in the wrong here? Mm-hmm. Like I immediately go back to, I was told my dad would kill us when I was 12. Like it rolls off my tongue because I've had to question it so many times, right? Over the years that now it's just like, it's almost this Pavlovian response of, I asked this question, this is my response, you know? And so I think that shocks people. That is literally what goes in my head, you know, from this type of childhood, what have you. Mm-hmm. Not good, bad, right, or wrong. I'm not judging it, but those are the types of questions that our brains have to answer.
And with you, I think it's awesome that you've developed kind of a shorthand. You've gotten to the root of it instead of having to go through the whole conversation. It's like, well, no, like I was told I was going to be murdered by someone who could very easily do it.
Right. You
know, like that was a real possibility on the table.
Yeah.
So of course that changes the way your brain responds.
Absolutely. Yeah. But I think what we're both kind of alluding to is like that ability to just have it roll off the tongue and to that quickly answer the question, that took years of work.
Yes.
Right? Years. Where it didn't come easily.
Well, years of work and very intensive support too. Like if we're doing public service announcements, don't try this alone.
Don't do this alone.
Get some help from someone like Jen, who happens to be super awesome at bringing this shit out.
Or if you're dealing with mental health issues, someone not Jen. No, thank you for that. Mm-hmm. So I would love to know. Oh gosh, I have a couple of questions for you. One I want to use for wrapping up. Like you've been given this gift, and I use that word very intentionally, right? To me, it is a gift. You had this past, you had this upbringing, you had all the things happen, and you went through a lot of shit. And through that, you were able to open your eyes and reevaluate everything. And that to me, that's the gift part of it, right? Like, and a lot of people might not like that word. That's okay. This is my show. I think people listening understand that about me and finding the silver linings, but what did that gift give you? Who are you today? Right? Because you had this opportunity from all the shit to rebuild who you want to be. Mm-hmm. That's beautiful. Like, again, I sit here saying it's a gift and I don't mean that to sound Pollyanna-ish and what have you. And now I'm being too defensive. That's
what you're talking a little bit.
Yeah. That's what Rachel does to me. Jen, you're over talking. You're over explaining. Thank you, Rachel.
You're welcome. Anytime. I absolutely believe it's a gift. Like I am so incredibly grateful for everything I've gone through. And I know that sounds very like, you know, I've been through the wars and come out the other side. But like, I think this applies to just the very fraught business of living. But I'm incredibly grateful for everything that I've gone through because it made me into who I am today. It made me into somebody with an extraordinarily high bullshit tolerance or low bullshit tolerance. I'm just nope, I'm not doing that. It forced me to look at my own like habits of thought, I suppose. Mm-hmm. So because my brain was like weaknesses, but it's not really that. It's more like habitual stories that actually I didn't really care to believe any longer. It's made me resilient as fuck. Like you can throw pretty much anything at me. And like short of my entire life crashing down in a garbage fire, I'm pretty much okay. And even when that happened, I was like, I'm going to write in my journal and it will be fine. And it was, you know,
I'm going to write 3 journals.
It'll be done.
To process my emotions. Damn it.
Which like, and it's so hard though. And that's the healthy side. So, you know, if we're going there, the unhealthy side of that is I've had periods of depression where I have literally been unable to get out of bed for weeks at a time.
Yeah.
And that's scary.
Thank you for sharing that.
Of course. I mean, because I'm not alone. I know statistically I'm not alone.
Right.
Even though a little part of me is still like, can't believe you shared that. But yeah, I mean, times when I didn't know how to be. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't want to be at all.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's hard. Now I feel like the SNL skit. That's hard.
Yeah.
Money
I know.
Bombs.
I'm like dropping truth bombs and now let's joke about it.
I'm like, Because that's how Jen awkwardly.
No, that's how I do it too. I'm like, yeah, it was fucking hilarious. I wanted to die.
If we were to really know Rachel today, what would we know about you?
I am so deeply curious about what's going to happen next in life. And I'm really, really happy about that. I've been so enamored with just like humanity lately. And I know that sounds all big and Pollyanna-ish and whatever, but because I have this thing where people on the street talk to me and tell me like everything, like really deeply inappropriate, shouldn't be telling a stranger type things.
And you and I lean in and like, tell me more.
I know. And I'm like, and how did that make you feel?
Like armchair therapist here.
Yeah.
Exactly. Which is not okay. Don't do that.
Yeah. Don't try this at home. And also it's really great for my work because I love talking to my clients about that. And I love that. I mean, I have had clients tell me just deeply terrible things that have happened to them. And I've never met them in person, but like, I remember there was one month where I had three separate clients tell me on coaching calls how they had been raped.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's not something that you normally talk about with a copywriter, I think.
Yeah.
I don't really know. But I love that I can be there for the clients in that way and not in a like, I can fix you or I'm, you know, Miss Super Therapist or whatever, but I'm like, dude, that sucks. There is nothing I can say on this call that can express to you how sorry I am. And I still see you as the resilient, amazing person you are. You can't tell me anything about you that's going to make me think less of you in that way.
Yeah, that's a gift that you and I have. Mm-hmm. I think it's a pretty beautiful gift. For sure. Mm-hmm. As we wrap up, what is something you want people to know, to walk away from this conversation with?
There's so many directions I could go. I know, right? Now, where I'm like, you are not alone. Estrangement sucks, but is sometimes the right choice. And only you know if it's the right choice. Nobody else can tell you, which also sucks because then you have to take responsibility for it. But is also empowering because once you decide, it's your decision. So that's my PSA for estrangement. Like big life sense of the word, I would love people to walk away knowing that I genuinely believe we all have something inside of us, like our thing, our purpose. There's a really great quote where they talk about it being the voice of vocation. And so you have the voice of vocation within you and you don't have to do anything with it. There's no like shoulds or I'm not here to tell people what to do with their lives. But there's this sacred opportunity, I think, to become so fully human and so fully yourself by embracing that and leaning into it in whatever form it takes.
Yeah.
That's what it's all about for me. It's just, I would love if people even get a little bit curious about that, you know, automatically pushing it down. Or, you know, if you're going to push it aside, consciously push it aside. That's cool. You do you.
Yeah.
But just to see the opportunity, I think, is something that's very amazing about being human.
Oh, I love that. All right. I have to ask, do you have any recent awkward moments you could share with us?
Oh God, all the time, continuously. I am a walking collection of awkward moments and strange anecdotes. I think most recently, when I'm in my own world, I'm really bad about being like understanding how the normal flow of human conversation goes because I don't really do small talk. Like someone's either telling me about, you know, the miscarriage they had 10 years ago and have never told me one, or I'm not talking about the weather. Like there is no in between and I don't really understand the flow of conversation.
Yeah, me either. Yeah.
Even though I try and I can fake it okay if I'm thinking about it, but if you hit me out of the blue, I'm just like,
Like,
what do you want? I don't know. So I was sitting at a bar recently waiting for my friend to show up because we were going to have drinks for happy hour. And I came up and said, oh, can I join you? And like, didn't even cross my mind. I was just like, nope, you know, just nope. And then, but like half a second after it was out of my mouth, I was like, oh, this is like what people do when they want to like get to know each other. And like, like this might be a sexy thing. And so just to make it really awkward, as soon as I said it, I was like, oh, but you can sit there until my friend gets here if you want to. And so he was like, okay. And he sat down and I could see him kind of like start to like make a conversation. Like he would open his mouth and then shut it and like open it and then shut it. And then after a minute, he was like, I'm going to go sit over here now. And I was like,
that is so Awkward. Oh my God. Like, I can just picture this. I'm pretty sure that's happened to me. That's funny. Thank you for sharing.
Yeah, totally. Well,
you're amazing.
Oh, likewise.
I wish everyone had the opportunity to not just work with you, but just know you. You're a pretty special person.
The feeling is very mutual.
Yeah, thank you.
And that's a wrap. Isn't Rachel absolutely delightful? To learn more about Rachel and past episodes of Going There, you can head over to jenvertinen.com/podcast. And I would love to have you join the conversation over on Instagram. You can find me at jenvertinen. I know, so original. But until next time, bye.